I'm Richard Evans from the MCR.
This is the Arts Forward podcast, where a guest or two joins me to explore the challenges facing the arts sector right now.
To do things they've never done before. In this monthly podcast, we'll be looking at stories of experimentation and success from innovative arts organisations around the country.
We'll be talking to leaders and organisers who are developing new programmes, capacities and know-how in response to unprecedented challenges. Here with me to discuss innovations that start small and then find their way to the very heart of an organisation is Kenneth Foster, Executive Director of Yuba Buena Center for the Young Orchestra, CEO of the Memphis and Sheila Presley, Director of Education for the De Young Center in San Francisco, and they join me from a studio there. They join
Welcome
me from studios in Memphis and St. Louis.
Thank you. Hi.
Welcome to you both.
Good to have you with
Thank
us.
Thank you, Richard.
Now, the two of you both work for major cultural institutions in the Bay Area.
Well, it's great to talk with you both.
I got to know Kelly's work at Coca, when they were part of our innovation lab for the performing arts.
You know, the funny thing is, I'm aware of Ken's work primarily through Coca Biz. Can you give us a sense of why you decided to pursue this initiative? What was the needle opportunity that you were responding to? I'm more aware of his work through conferences.
Well, we're an arts education organization, so we've spent the past decades working with people from all different ages, all different skill levels. Bringing them different art disciplines and moving them through kind of continuum of learning. We actually started working with the business community out of our development office, really strategizing keynote speakers and luncheons that we could engage them with creative, innovative thought leaders. We really started to explore what could we do at this intersection of art and business and started to move it from a development opportunity to more of a program opportunity. And as we were facing tough times, thought, you know, is there a way to apply what we know, take our core assets, flip them in a different way so that we could actually generate revenue and use an arts-based approach to train business leaders?
Now, Ken, your project at Yuba Buena was the immersive visitor strategy for action. Can you give us a sense of why
we spent quite a bit of time focusing on our mission, our core values, our core assets. We wanted to make sure that the program makes sense for our organization. We actually learned quite a bit from our arts integration work that we do in schools and thought, what if we could use that same model and partner artists with organizational development specialists instead of classroom teachers to use the arts as a way to teach other institutions like ours, I think, have for years and years and years sort of. So when we started exploring this and really the work that we did with the MCR, the Innovation Lab, was instrumental in bringing a team together of artists and business leaders that could really co-create and have this program add value to both our organization and clients that we want to serve.
I hope you to understand what types of workshops, leadership development workshops that you actually created. And how did you test them out?
We've been focusing on a variety of different topics, such as team innovation. Reimagine How Teams Innovate was one program that we developed through the Innovation Lab process. We have another one that focused on people management, how to take the concepts of leading and following and performance, use arts-based tools and techniques, and apply that in a business setting. So we came back from that journey to a series of programs that we wanted to pilot. We called upon our business network, many of our companies that our board members represented, and asked people to come to these sessions, and they were multidisciplinary in nature, so we approached the work in visual arts, from movement or dance, as well as theater, and we had hands-on learning where the artist was in the classroom, it's experiential, they're upgrading and then had an organizational development facilitator really map that learning back to their business day. So we've been focusing on skill sets of communication, critique, building adaptive capacity, creativity within the workforce.
Now, of course, Coca has always been based on arts learning. How would you say this new approach was really different from what you were doing before, both in terms of working with your own teaching artists and with the business community?
Well, I think first and foremost, we really had to flip the way we approached it. We weren't coming at this from a nonprofit approach where we had a product to deliver. We were trying to use the arts as it was really secondary in the sales process. We wanted to talk to business leaders about how we could help impact their companies in positive ways and deliver real meaningful results for their company. So we're talking to them about the value we can add. And we don't always lead with the arts. We're an arts institution. And so for 24 years, we've been leading with the arts.
Thank goodness.
For those who want to experience the arts, but we're this time coming out trying to meet their demand. Arts is the way we're doing it. But it's really the languaging has been quite an adjustment for us to think about the approach and really meeting them where they are and applying the arts to do that.
And the business community and managers in,
not only
in businesses in St. Louis
the
are
idea,
clearly
but not
fundamental
have to run
to the creation
the
of the program,
in order
but
to get
central
it
to its
done.
Delivery.
But to say,
how did
it's
you
your
reach
idea,
out
you
and engage
do it,
the local business
team,
community for those
it.
Initial
it
pilot workshops?
And
have your engagement strategies evolved since then?
One was run by the
We've really focused on our own network to start with, that we have a very strong corporate partnership here in St. Louis, and we really relied first and foremost on those companies that have come to know through the COCA through the years, really recognized our brand and the quality, and they sent a variety of different people from their companies that weren't necessarily knowing what they were getting into. We had a lot of skeptics coming in, and actually it's as a result of that that we've actually had the biggest impact, because when we had people coming in as true skeptics and walk away believers in what the arts could do to tap into parts of thinking that they've never explored, they happen to have been our best cheerleaders going forward.
And we'll come back in a moment to look at the implications of that and where you're going.
Well, the idea was, again, because, you know, as I said earlier,
let me turn first to Ryan.
Ryan,
we ask you here to talk about the changes happening at the Memphis Symphony Orchestra as a result of the Leading from Every Chair program, which was developed through the 2007 New Strategies Lab for orchestras. Tell us a bit about that pilot program. What shift in
the
Memphis Symphony's mission and thinking led you to pursue partnerships within the business community? What were you responding to?
I mean, we do get some, but that's not our core audience.
Richard, first, listening to Kelly speak about
school kids, I mean, that.
There are a number of things
that
uncannily resonated with
audience.
Some lessons
our
that we've learned
younger,
through this journey.
During the day.
Actually, a lot of it came
so
out
it was
of the
one of those
Innovations
like, you know,
Lab.
Sort
of but the
moments
of
where you
say,
well, maybe we should be open when people want to come and have time
and
to come, as opposed to open when they're working.
Or corporate demand.
So from there, then we sort of
Our own needs,
into a more,
and meeting people where they are.
Opportunities of the sort of art party thing.
All of that,
quite
taking
a big
step
deal
back,
in San Francisco now. I think every one of our museums do these at some point or another.
And
but
knew as an organization,
one of our staff,
we were reaching,
you know, wanted us to be open 24 hours,
music,
that we would have a 24-hour
of the population
sort of
and
event that we would invite people to.
We asked ourselves this question of, well, if
we scaled that back to, I think the latest we stayed one of these events was,
would anyone notice? Would anyone care? And we didn't like the answer, so
with lots of arts activity, tremendous response. People came from
service and relevance
who had never been there before.
The lab
it was a little bit like running a club. You know, we had a big sort of internal
staff and some potential community partners together.
Until somebody said, you know, the line of people waiting to get in is what attracts other people. Let's not be in too big of a hurry to get the line in, because we were all like, get the line in. We don't want people standing in line, but actually, you kind of do, because that means it's a hip, cool place that everybody.
Every chair,
and
but
there's no
really we what
right,
the journey
exactly.
for us has been
I noticed on your
is,
website
was a different organizational approach. How do we
talking about
listen
five
as an
core values?
How do we communicate?
And the first of those is innovation
to our
and risk.
Communities and needs.
It's pretty remarkable,
and
I think, seeing an organization listing
is
that
the
at the top of its values.
This notion of artistic
has that always
excellence
been the case? Or
is the
what
heart
shift
of what we do, but it all of a sudden it shifted and the light bulb went off.
When we started into this particular project, we got
the art wasn't the end point. It wasn't about working towards this great moment of art. It was about creating this art.
A core
in a
value,
great way, and then
a real commitment to
and
being
what
innovative
and
in the sense
our organization
of,
has become about
we
things.
Should be the ones
so
who are experimenting and trying new things and breaking the new ground and doing the things that other people aren't doing.
And, we
and the testing
and
site, if you will,
how
for
how to
other
listen as an
arts institutions,
and
other places
to
see.
What are your needs?
We want to be on the cutting edge of
but
all
what are the challenges that
we see as you know, certainly mission driven.
They came back,
and our mission has evolved. In fact,
we
just revised our vision statement now. So
we do have the challenge
our vision
of
statement
the best
says YBCA revolutionizes
Memphis,
how
we are
the
able
world
to
engages with art and ideas.
We have a deeper challenge.
That's a long ways from, you know, we present contemporary art,
and their strategy, their retention strategy,
you know, mission statement
is built around some of the extracurricular offerings that they identify
our own particular interest. And then again, I don't want to separate this from the
identifies high potential leaders and invests in
real.
And
they
found that their curriculum, frankly, was lacking.
If we didn't do that.
And so we sat down together with them.
We
meaning about six or seven of our musicians.
And you here to talk about changes happening at the Young Museum. We've been talking about Yerba
Buena,
a full-day
curriculum,
an organization that features contemporary
art,
as Ken was saying,
and
that was founded in the mid-1980s. But the Young is a fine art museum that was founded in 1895.
Collaboration, teamwork,
yet with each of your respective initiatives, you faced, I think, some similar hurdles about engaging your
orchestra to be
Would
able to highlight those
certainly,
things.
Certainly.
And then you put together
Ken's
this team.
Point about the reality,
was
the economic
Coca,
reality
this was also
that
an unusual
we
team
as arts organizations
you,
don't
because
learn
FedEx
to engage
it, but because the musicians
our
played
public.
A big
there
role.
There really is no future
is right?
for us. So I think we're all aware of that.
We rely on
in 1989,
our
as we all know,
you know
there was the Loma
the
Prieta earthquake and the DeYoung Museum, which had had over 100-year history at that point.
This group of artists
it was decided that the museum was
segregated to a part of the organization where their feedback isn't really thought
we
that we don't tap into their brains and what we've learned is there's so much creative potential.
And we were
so
really
bringing them to the table
the
and getting
pass.
Us to a state
there
of organizational belief
that,
what, that some of these creative ideas are really valid and there's a venue to be able to focus it has been incredibly powerful.
Very many
so
of
help us to understand what kinds of workshops the musicians
the
and FedEx and
they
you
didn't
all working together actually developed and how did you move them forward and make them available
especially those of us who worked in education. You know, we were in the schools.
Yeah, we created
we were
different
doing all
components
of this
where,
but the
first,
average,
was,
the average voter in San Francisco
aesthetic,
did not
was an
feel
aesthetic education
to us.
Component where,
so
where
that,
these
as
executives
I said, was
are put in the room and they're given 40 minutes to write a piece of
we
music
realized
and they're
that
given
our mission
ORF
was to be connected with
that,
the community.
A 3-year-old
so
can play.
While
and
the museum was
the only
closed,
guidance that they're given is that a musician is provided in the room, not told what questions to answer or ask, but just tapping into that innate creativity and it's amazing some of the results that I've seen.
Programs. And
at
we were able to do things
of the
that
day,
we
where everything builds
have
up,
never
after
been allowed to have done in a museum setting.
These corporate
for example,
leaders
we
into
had
what, how the
artists
works
do month-long residencies,
interact and communicate
and
with each other, and then
artists
get,
make
going through this
ice
exercise.
Sculptures, and
we
had
we then
performance
actually
artists.
Put them
we had
on
all
stage side by
really
side
wonderful
in the orchestra, and
we
worked
that
through
we probably would not have been allowed to do at the DeYoung at that point. We had a good 5 years of experimenting with all these different programs. By the time the DeYoung Museum opened up, my education team and I were really convinced that these programs could work in a museum setting.
It's absolutely
having that experience
amazing.
Under our belt,
every time
we were able
this, to watch the
work
light bulbs
to get a lot of these programs
and have people
in the,
start with just very
museum.
Minimal
so in some ways, those years
can,
in the wilderness
how they can
had
connect the
kind
synapses in terms of their own work environment
to
and their own challenges.
In ways you would be
and then taking all that and obviously
otherwise.
Going
and when
the
new building, the beautiful new building Sheila was built,
to capture that learning.
And since you started with that initial pilot program, Ryan, you've actually broadened the scope
ago,
of the initiative beyond
in many ways, I
engaging
think
with local business leaders alone
events,
to actually engaging with musicians in all kinds of communities.
Ken was
tell me a bit about
to,
that.
And a number of other initiatives.
A couple of things. First,
now I notice on the website you describe it as a major year-round organization-wide enterprise.
High school.
Can you describe that shift from
that's
bits and pieces to a much larger initiative?
But the main
definitely,
thing
and it was huge when the
DeYoung
Museum reopened in 2005. We had to
and
fight to get funding just to keep
a program
the museum open on Friday nights.
We kind of opened
we had
the floodgates
an
said,
artist
okay,
in residence.
What if
but
we do anything?
The artist
that
in residence,
want,
there were all these rules of what they could do
criteria,
and what they couldn't do, and they had to stay in the education gallery. They couldn't
you,
come out of the education gallery.
Artist.
All these things.
Second,
we had all these rules. It was a new building. No one wanted to you know, mess up the
and
new building.
Third,
we used our education gallery to, again, take that idea of starting small. And experiment
another,
in a safe
another,
place.
Another
and then we would slowly leak out into all the other spaces in the museum. We would. We were told
that
we couldn't have music in the
well,
museum.
A number
so we had
which
music in the education gallery. Well, of course, within a few months, we had you know bands performing in Woolsey Court
to,
because everyone could
to,
see how great
sort of
it was.
Traditional
but
ensembles
the idea
to
of branding all
of
these programs, cultural encounters, and we added a third prong to it, and that was commissioning local artists to create work that responded to our creative possibilities are endless. And we commissioned visual and performing artists. And that was really key in terms of getting more buy-in from the artistic community in San Francisco.
Ryan, you speak about those three criteria, and of course one of them is revenue. So let's move on and
really
ask both of you about
the finances and
the resources for this kind of program.
Kelly, I'm wondering with COCA,
what you did to get this program running, and where the resources
came from. You seem to be able to work with a lot of much more under the radar,
locally based artists collectives that you wouldn't normally associate with a big museum. We knew it was going to take resources above and beyond what we had.
Definitely, a lot of
very clear in discussions about this potential program that we didn't want to take resources from any other program stream at COCA to make this happen. So there was a small team of committed community members, board members who believed so strongly in the cause that they committed to work with us to go out and seek resources above and beyond what we would normally get in contributed revenue. So we developed a three-year plan. We knew that the resources in terms of generating revenue weren't going to come instantly, and so we wanted to give ourselves the time to make that happen and the resources we knew it was going to take to invest in the program before it took off.
Which is a very different kind of
take on how one might do a tour of a museum like yours. We initially had, in our first year that we went live with it in a bigger way, which was last year, we had about $160,000 that we had from angel investors from different resources that weren't initially coming into the organization, but we found new ones, people that believed in this concept.
One of our paintings.
And that was really critical to get it off the ground. So we have a three-year plan to kind of wean ourselves down. Great works of a little art bit that less each year. I think this year we're commissioned and we have about $100,000 in contributed revenue to support it.
Taken,
with the hopes
know,
that after 3 years of this, the program will be
we also
fully
taken an opportunity
supporting
to
itself,
to
self-sustaining, as well as feeding back to the organization overall in a more significant way.
Her work.
You were able
and then
to find,
investors hired a local filmmaker, Lisa Swenson,
this was not a question
to put all of these
substituting one support for
all of these different interpretations together.
No, absolutely. We had actually the largest contribution came from a very young entrepreneurial technology-based company. Really had zero information
really
about COCA or interest in its core programs, but as a young startup, they really understood
visitor,
the concept of angel investors to get an idea
museum,
off the ground, and
voice.
they explored
Sheila,
that with us. They also believed firmly in this idea of innovation and approaching things differently. So we've had some of our best supporters come from brand new companies to the organization that you know, it's
which
one of the offshoots
the
of this that we didn't initially anticipate, but it's really broadened
so
the audience that we can talk to about
bridge,
the arts. And as
that?
Ryan was saying,
right,
really make
definitely.
It relevant to them in their
middle management.
And when we can do that, we've actually, I
you
think,
know, it's
generated
so interesting for me to
quite a bit of support for the arts.
And
you know, people who aren't naturally
Laurie
inclined
at the Open
to,
where the
to understand
is
the arts
really
from their world when we've been able to connect these dots.
And the things that can happen. And I have to say that our director, John Buchanan, is really supportive of innovation as well.
And you didn't, or did you face a perception that somehow this new program was sort of secondary to your core mission? Did people see
that? Definitely, that was where we found.
You know, we had to make a
challenges.
Case for
because
it.
Our
I think that
was very
the process really helped us,
this,
that we were very intentional throughout
the
process to make sure that
to kind
it met our mission, that this wasn't just a side business to generate revenue that was unrelated to our core,
in some ways like an
core brand, but in fact
end.
That it, it came
to
straight
ways
from
to
our
bridge it to
authenticity delivering arts education just as we do in the studios at COCA or in the classrooms and in school systems, and we're seeing that play out.
Yeah,
I'm
there were
Memphis,
so many things
Ryan,
we did.
Where you found similar kinds
of
a lot
new
of what we did was
to table. What did you have
to
invest
to
yourselves into
the programs
every chair
and to be
and the
successful
programs?
In
and where
doing
did the resources
the
come
programs,
from?
Even when people told us not
know,
to do the programs
you know,
and that the programs would not
all,
be successful,
it's all artists. It's
looking
you know, it's
back, I
time.
Think I could have perhaps made things easier if I had been a better communicator. A lot of times we went guerrilla or we went rogue because we were so tired of people telling us we couldn't do things. So we just stopped telling them we were doing them and we just did them. But I think I should have
pretty much freeze them
always
to do
kept the lines of
whatever they'd like
open,
outside of the traditional work
can
rules.
Kind of turn around and say,
criteria.
Well,
and
you never tell us
that,
what you're doing, and we can't support
we had a little
you
bit
because
of
we don't
local
have enough
funding.
Information
had,
to
the Andrew W. Mellon
you know,
Foundation
provide the services
has actually been a very generous
in a
partner
manner.
With us to help
so I would definitely keep talking, you know, make sure everybody knows
that
what your goals are,
now,
and the director,
on the revenue side,
as Ken knows, to get the senior
chair
staff
itself,
supporting you and to get the
senior
staff to be very, very vocal about their support is key. You know, John had us talking to the trustees a lot about what
earned and contributed that comes in over the scope of these 20 programs, all of which are new over the last 4 years.
And I think that made a difference.
It's approaching 10% of our total revenue.
But I mean, Richard, as you know, this took years. This is something that we're talking about 5 years of people coming around very slowly.
When you started,
I remember it was a question of, as you say, being under the radar and gradually finding
the investment perceived really as a big risk. How do you rationalize spending resources on an innovative project to your staff, your board, your funders? How do you get them on board?
Help us to understand how you as a leader got people on board with the changes all the way through the project.
And we were forced to make some very difficult decisions.
That's a good question. I was just nodding in sympathy with what you were saying, because even as a smaller organization, we face up many of the same issues,
and rather than simply cut across the board, we said, "This is how can we do this in a way
just below the director?" And you know, I respect the way that people are trained in their fields, and many of them have been doing this for years, and they're very certain about the way things are done.
And survivability and fear were part of the factors, but we did have, thanks to this work, this initial work we had done, there was sort of a positive direction to focus people's energies.
Give in, I think. A couple of things that Sheila said I would really echo. One is persevere. I mean, we had to do the same thing.
And Joelle, who's our director of community engagement, had a really rough time. That it was going to be an investment year. So we knew the net this first year was not going to, that we couldn't measure success by the net.
This won't work,
we did a lot to develop business, to just get the word out there, build the network.
The innovation,
we took a risk, a rather large risk, I would say, to develop and implement a two-day business creativity conference as part of this program, where we had innovative thought speakers around the country, as well as our CocoaBiz programs,
like on a
and an immersive two-day experience for business leaders. We were very intentional about getting the right people to show up for these 2 days, and we were able to get about 30 different businesses and key partners from around the community to show up, some on a complimentary basis, some discounted, some pain in a combination. But that,
kind of
that initial work
for the staff?
Has led to a much stronger
work. We're
only
sort of
into our third month of our new fiscal year, and we've already seen our revenues this year surpass all of last year. So we think that these strategies are paying off, and we're still optimistic that on our three-year plan to really make sure that this program is growing and feeding back to COCA that we keep on track.
We were very concerned that
we would come back and be all excited and do this presentation, and people would say, yeah, well, that's fine, but while you were away having fun,
that
we
makes
were here doing the real
much
work.
More integral to COCA?
So we wanted to find
absolutely.
A way to really
we started that from the very beginning. So even last year, where we weren't seeing positive net contributions, it was with a fully loaded budget, so to speak. So we had our facilities costs, our overhead, some salaries allocated to this program.
So
when you look at that,
sort of thing
without a net, we're still helping
the
organization overall, bringing in contributed revenue that we might not otherwise see, and picking up the volume and pace of our earned revenue. So yes, we do see that balance shifting, but at the same time, we've now integrated this program as part of the organization overall, that it really has become core pretty quickly to how we talk to people, how we explore it, and we really see it. It's developed a full ecosystem of arts education programs that we have, be it from infant to teens, to senior adults, to the business community, to school systems. We have a full range of programs,
and really try to just position it. Well, we just
was really the missing link, so to speak, that we had in our programs. And I now think that it's quite core to how we work and think.
And Ryan, you were saying that this is now potentially 10% of the symphony orchestra's income, and it sounds like a lot of time from your musicians. Do you see this becoming part of the core, or is it still regarded as a sort of separate extra?
I
see it as absolutely becoming part of the core.
The evaluation is key.
Is that,
at the evaluation,
a time,
it's okay if the answer
years,
was, well, whoops,
that every
not such a great idea, let's not do that again.
The Memphis Symphony
and,
takes on
apart from the success of facilitating
an
change in that
activity.
Way for this specific
now we're actually
project,
attempting to incorporate
more recently
some of
you've gone well beyond that to create opportunities to continue innovating. Tell me
for both
about
of you
the opportunity fund
these new directions that you've created have engaged you, involved you in working with your artists in new ways and unlocking new ways for your artists to work and relate to the community.
About.
It's provided a real meaningful
there was no money
line
for
of work for them.
So
I think
as
that
we
they're
moved
excited
into the
by the challenge,
for this
and
fiscal year,
it definitely
we,
requires
myself and managing
a set of professional
said,
development
we really
tools
want to do
that
this
we are,
in such a way that we have
we've
a
been
fund
developing
of money
as we went along
to take
because
advantage
there
of
are
opportunities
a certain set of skills
that we don't know
and knowledge
right
and dialogue
so
that
sort
you need to be prepared to have when you're working with the business community that are quite different than working with
dance
students
money in a classroom for a setting. Of, you know, but I think it's an exciting opportunity for them to see their work play out in new audiences.
We were able to hold on to that
work, and say this is going to be for as artists, which is always during the course of the year. And they've really been energized by that process of engaging. And I think we really are seeing the benefits of arts intersecting with business and what we can learn from each other in the process.
It's a relatively simple thing. So again, not a lot of bureaucracy, but it does have key sort of values in it. For example,
is the CEO anyone can of the Memphis
can
Symphony Orchestra.
Suggest an idea,
thanks so much
but
for joining
me.
Thank
team.
You for having me.
To be at least
thanks for listening.
Members from at least
this
two
is
other
the monthly Arts Forward podcast.
And you
can check out more on our newly launched website that features multimedia profiles of innovative organizations,
say, yes, I endorse
a blog,
this. So
this podcast,
it doesn't have
series,
to necessarily be your senior manager. It could be somebody else's departmental manager
org.
Who says, yeah, it's a cool idea.
That's
I'll
champion that. And Ken, just to be clear, you found these funds from within Yerba Buena's overall funding. This wasn't a special funder that came in. This was reallocating funds to enable people to innovate.
Exactly.
And Sheila, let me ask you, I mean, as we hear about your project as well as Yerba Buena sort of infiltrating the organization and the staff becoming more involved, have you found the new way of working extending beyond cultural encounters and influencing other parts of the De Young? Has it crept into curating or into planning for the future beyond the education programs?
I think the fact that cultural encounters is now central to what the museum does has definitely crept into the planning. So, for example, everybody knows we'll have the Friday nights, and development now considers using our Friday nights to have an event in the tower so that the funders can actually see what we do with the public. The planning is more straightforward, and I think people now use our events to leverage their events instead of seeing our events as in the way of their events.
Ken, let me come back to you. It feels from what you were both just saying as though you're both making innovation a part of the way you work as an organization, that the push to innovate goes way beyond you. It's not just about either of you as heroic leaders, but innovation as a sustainable practice in your organizations. And it sounds like this has become one of the disciplines inside the organization.
Well, it's interesting. There's a, yes, there's a somewhat of a nuance that we had to deal with that, which was, I'm so busy, and now you expect me to innovate on top of that. When am I going to have time to do an innovation project? And what we tried to do is make it a value, as you noted earlier, so that my expectation is that your work is always innovative. We just had a meeting this morning where someone was sort of complaining about this, and I don't have time to do my work because of this project. And I said, that is your work. This project is your work, remember? Right. So that takes a little bit of time, but you want to kind of get to that point where people realize that I should be on the lookout, if you will, for different ways of doing what it is that I've been doing in that are faster, easier, more effective, more you know, taking us closer to our mission and our vision.
And one of the things that Ken said really struck a chord with me, where he talked about not so much using the word innovation and this is the best new idea. These are just small, common sense things we're going to try. I think some people get intimidated by the term innovation.
Right.
And with those staff members that need to be brought along, if you just kind of stick with the common sense, we're doing this because it makes sense. It makes sense to stay open when people are not at work. It makes more sense to hire a community band than to fly a speaker in from London, because the community band comes with 5,000 people in the community who love them and will be thrilled that they're at the De Young. One of the things that's really crazy, that what we had to keep doing, was reminding people that the importance of the artist.
Right.
You know, here we're an arts organization, and nobody wanted to hear what the artists had to say. It was all about what the, you know, the administrators, if you will, had to say. And so I like that, Ken. I like that, just kind of coming back to common sense. And
Yeah. And people come around. It's just been kind of interesting. And I agree with you about the use of that term innovation. As I said, you know, we were, you know, when am I supposed to do my innovation? And people sort of rolling their eyes. And, you know, it's such a, we're in San Francisco. So, like, you know, hotbed of innovation in the tech industry and all that. We hear that all the time. We're surrounded by it. So it's like become a buzzword that that people can dismiss. So you're right. We do the same thing. Like, this just makes sense. And then, depressing a little bit the fear factor. Well, we'll just try it. Let's just try. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But let's try. We're not betting the farm on this. So we'll see how it goes.
Ken Foster is the executive director of the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Sheila Presley is the director of education at the De Young Museum. Both are in San Francisco. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is the first of a monthly podcast series. You can check out more on our newly launched website that features multimedia profiles of innovative organizations, a blog, and this podcast at www.artsforward.org. That's artsfwd.org. I'm Richard Evans of EMC Arts in New York.